It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Niall and I podcast with me, Andrea Cleary, and him, Niall Byrne. I'm doing the intro today because there might be some noise on Niall's end, but that's fine. We're professionals. Today, we're really excited after, what is it, two and a half years or so, longer maybe. We have had friend of the show, Sorka Richardson, on to talk about five songs that influenced the sound or the songwriting or just in some way her new album, Smiling Like an Idiot, which is excellent, is available now. Buy it on Bandcamp. Sorka is also playing the Olympia this Thursday, so 2 days from now. And we had a chat with her and it was great.
So Smiling Like an Idiot is just out. We talk about how the producer, the LA producer, Alex Kazanoff, was a key part of it, talking about working over Zoom to record an album. And as well, of course, like her big tour dates, Sorka's big tour dates are happening as of this week, Wednesday in the Limelight in Belfast, and the big Dublin headliner in the Three Olympia, the Olympia in Dublin on Thursday, which you'll be going to, I believe. Nice. And then dates in Edinburgh, Manchester, yes, London, Brighton.
I am going to.
And Germany and the Netherlands, Amsterdam, all throughout November as well. So really nice to get Sorka back. And yeah, I think there's the, I would say for extra reading material, go and read the journalist, Andrea Cleary's, the Journal of Music of Ireland review of the record, and I think that gives you a good grounding in what the record is and what it's all about. So yeah, thanks to Sorka for doing the chat. And of course, if you want to join and participate in more conversations around music like this, you can join our Discord, and you can get access through patreon.com/nodder9, as well as weekly playlists. I think I'm going to do a best of all time volume 2. It's about time. I won't be at the gig this week because I'll be away. I'm going to New York. So that means there's no podcast next week. But there's plenty there to delve into for now. And yeah, let's have a chat with Sorka.
My love, feeling cold, 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 feeling nicotine, but you just
Sorka, how are you? Nice to see you again. We were saying that, what was it, February 2020 is the last time you were on, Andrea?
Either January in or
person,
February.
In person, yeah.
You were the last guest we had in before everything
closed. I think, it was a choice prize special, was it? Or maybe that's why I was there.
January 2020, yes, that's right. Your choice prize nominee was the reason you were there.
That was why I was, talking about myself again.
Only the 77th episode. Jesus, we're on 189 or something now. There you go. Wow, okay.
You have to have a party for episode 200.
Yeah, why not?
I don't even think, did we do anything for 100?
No, of course not. We never do anything.
I think we were just like, meh. Yeah.
Sounds like a lot of effort.
It does, yeah. I mean, maybe a live podcast here or there. I don't know. We keep threatening to do
that. 100 was during the lockdown, so we were probably too depressed. We were just like, let's just get this over with.
There was nothing to do. There's nothing to do.
No.
But anyway, there's plenty going on for you. There's plenty for you to do at the moment. you've got a tour coming up because you just released your second album, Smiling Like an Idiot.
I did.
Very good. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Nice to be able to probably look forward to a run of shows that you know are probably definitely going to happen.
Like my tours that we did, like my last Irish tour, we rescheduled it 7 times.
You must have got to a point where you're just like, well, what's the point? Like,
yeah, like my manager
over that again, and then gone back to that point again. You're just like,
honestly, my manager texted, or he was like, "We're okay, going to move them to these dates. Are you free?" And I didn't even check my calendar. I was like, "Sure," no difference what date it is because it's not going to happen. I think at one point I was like, okay, if this one doesn't happen, will we just cancel them because this is getting ridiculous? And he was like, no, Sorka, I know. He's like, they will happen eventually, and you've sold a lot of tickets and you don't have to sell them all again. So, you know, he was right, but it was, I don't know, just, I felt like it, I was like, this is never going to happen. So what's the point of even getting myself into a headspace where I was like anticipating set list or production or anything. I was like, I didn't engage with any of that because I was like, that will just make me disappointed.
Yeah, it's some form of abstract art you're engaging with. This imaginary tour that was never going to happen.
Exactly.
is tour?
Now it's nice to be able to put out an album, have a plan and actually follow it through so good, rather than just hoping sort of.
Is that what you want when you put out an album? It's like, okay, the album's out now, I need to tour it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess especially for this album, because so much of, I think many of the decisions we made in the studio were either informed by, things I had learned from touring, the little bit of touring that we did on the first album, and, ideas I had about what it would be like when we did this thing live. And so and even over the summer, we've done like maybe 4 or 5 of the songs from the album at festivals and stuff like that, which has been really fun. Like most of the songs are really, really fun to play live. And so I can't wait to do them do all of them really in big venues with my full band and all of that stuff. So it kind of feels like the thing it's one half of the puzzle is actually playing them.
Yeah.
It doesn't fully feel like it's completed until you actually do that part of it too, I think.
Yeah. And so will the songs from First Prize Bravery get a run on this tour as well?
Of course.
They'll get their dues. They will. They'll get their chance.
Feel like this weird guilt though doing the set list, It's like when I was younger and I was allowed like bring one teddy on holiday and I was like, okay. And then you have to leave like all the others at home. That's how I feel now doing this set list. But it's good.
I saw a TikTok that was like to all the girlies who felt bad for not saying goodnight to your teddies or for leaving out some of your teddies. How are your attachment issues going? And I was like, do not come for me like that.
Not today.
So not today, not this morning.
Oh dear.
So how are you feeling now with the second album being out? Is it easier the second time around?
It feels different. I enjoyed this release way more, and I think that's because I made an effort to market in a much bigger way. Like me and three of my friends, you probably know this because I'm sure we rented a camper van and we drove around Ireland for a week and we did like 8 little pop-up shows, and that made it feel like very celebratory and kind of exciting. And like, I remember when we put out the first one, I think we had like a listening party for some of my friends. We did an in-store the next day. And then I was like, cool, that was fun. But it's, I don't know, it was kind of nice to sort of celebrate it in a bigger way. And even in the pop-ups, like I did like small little mini solo sets for like 20 minutes or so, which was kind of nice as well. So yeah, this one has actually been very fun.
You've given us a few songs that we're going to frame the discussion with. I'm interested. But before we get to that point, I guess we'll just, with the album itself, I'm interested in, you know, what did you learn from the first one that you took into this one? Because, you know, first album is always the big one. You know, it's like, oh, I have to, you know, I got a debut album. And then you come to the second one. I'm like, did you learn stuff from the first one that you were just like, okay, I know what I want. I know what I want to say. I know what I don't want to say. I know how I want to put things across.
Yeah, I think I felt way more at ease making this one than I did the first one. Like the first one I felt, because I'd been releasing music for a while, like I'd put out a lot of singles before I'd ever made an album. Probably like an album's worth of singles, to be honest with you. And so then when I made the first album, I was like, maybe that is what people feel when they make their second album. You know, that's sort of the pressure because people already have an idea of who you are and what you do and this kind of thing. So I did feel pressure on my first album. And I remember at many points through it, I was like, no, this is wrong. And this isn't how it's supposed to sound. And even like we did a rehearsal with the band once and everything was still like so up in the air. And I remember going home and listening to all the voice memos from that rehearsal and being like, this is all wrong and we need to start again. And it was, none of that was true. It was just, we were just in the process of figuring things out. So I think I didn't really feel that stress this time around. And I sort of allowed myself to enjoy it way more, I think. There were many times when we were doing things in the studio as well that I was like, I don't know if that's the right idea, but sure, like let's, you know, we're having fun, let's just follow it, doesn't really matter. So I think that was felt quite different to me this time around. And also, like, I produced a couple songs on this album, which I didn't the first time around. I don't think I would have had the confidence in myself to do that on the first album. So I think I had a lot more confidence doing this one. And
was there a shorter time in which to record compared to album one?
This one we had 10 days properly in the studio, which was,
wow, that's not very long
at all. I think the last day we were there from 10 a.m. until 5 a.m., you know, so our 10 days were like, we made this joke that we were, by the end of it, that we were living on a boat because we never saw the sun and we felt completely delirious. And it actually made me feel better to think that we were like on a boat off at sea. But I think the first one, like we had probably had maybe 3 weeks or so, you know. So this one was kind of weird in that it started with working. We did it quite remotely because I was in Dublin. Alex, who I did most of it with, was in LA. So there was like a month or two of Zoom calls and whatever, making some decisions and sort of fine tuning things. Then he came to Dublin for like 2 weeks. We did those very intense days. And then he went back to LA and we finished it remotely.
Nice.
So in a weird way, it actually took longer because we weren't together for some of those parts, but I think actual recording time was shorter and much more intense.
Yeah. And that kind of Zoom assisted post-production kind of stuff. I mean, that changes something surely as well. It's like, must take a bit of getting used to do that kind of thing as opposed to sitting around somebody.
I hate it. Like, I wouldn't. Even I did like some songwriting sessions like that.
Yeah, that must be very tough because, you know, you're not feeding off somebody so directly in front of you.
It's really weird because you're on the call. Mm. Like some of them, I was on the call for like 7 hours or something, which just is way too long to be on any call about anything.
And you especially have to be okay with silence as well, I'm sure.
Yeah. But it's really awkward because like you'd be playing something. The nice thing about being in a studio or in a room with someone, it doesn't have to be a studio. It's just like you play something and then they add to it and you play along and then there's like a sort of organic collaborative thing that happens. But if even if it's a very good line, there might be a half a second delay and then as soon as someone tries to do it, it just sounds awful. And then it's just.
And you're having your ideas and like, so, like in terms of songwriting, sometimes very personal ideas mediated through something that could like glitch or you could lose your connection or like it's just having to mediate something very personal through tech is, I imagine, like quite difficult.
Yeah.
Like I had no difficult conversations over Zoom during COVID because it's not the place to do it, you know. So I imagine songwriting for that reason would be just that, like you said, that half second of silence could just be like, oh God, no.
Yeah.
I don't like it. Or
and the other thing that I found really hard was that often like my girlfriend would be like in the next room, like because everybody was working from home, so she'd be like, you know, in the kitchen working away, and I'd be in the living room on a weird Zoom call for like 8 hours writing a song, and I was like, can she hear me? Because if she can, this is so embarrassing. Like this is a process that nobody outside of it should ever witness. Least of all, like someone very close to you. So, but having said that, like there are some songs from those sessions that made it, like that ended up becoming like Stalemate came from one of those sessions. Hard to Fake It came from one of those sessions. So it wasn't pointless.
Different
and not particularly, not my favorite way of doing it.
Yeah, fair.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay, well, we pick. Let's play a bit of your first song that you chose, and you can tell us why you picked it. This is the Cocteau Twins, Cherry Colored Funk from the 1990 album Heaven or Las Vegas.
Song is one that kept coming up in the studio when we were recording it. I think it was Alex actually who first mentioned it. I think it probably maybe is a good indicator for some of this like production choices that we made, specifically on songs maybe like Spotlight Television. I don't know, there's kind of like this like dreamy, warbly sort of kind of lo-fi texture thing going on, but it's all very and even the guitar tone on it, I think, was one that we were like, that's perfect, how do we do that? You know, there's not that many points on the album where we'll like very closely sort of try to recreate something that we hear. I don't really like to do that, but I don't know, sometimes if you take one little ingredient of something and then build everything else your own around it, I think this just sonically, that like the guitars and the synths, even the way the vocal is treated, it's kind of not really out front and center, it's kind of part of the tapestry as well. That was sort of why we kept coming back to it, I think.
Classic shoegaze.
Speaking of taking one little ingredient, there was I cannot remember which one of your songs it is on the album, and I'm sorry, but there is a kind of a David Bowie Space Oddity guitar slide on it that I absolutely loved. And when I heard it for the first time, I laughed. I was like, I can't believe she did that, and it works so organically within the song. And I was like, is that, what was that like intentional? Were you like, I want to do a Bowie here, or did it just sound good?
I think, though, I don't remember us outright referencing it, but I do remember us talking about that song. So it could be that like someone does something and then everyone laughs and you're like, keep it in, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It was, when I heard it first, I was like, oh, that's great. And I think I'd just seen the Bowie documentary, or I was going to see it. So I'd been listening to a lot of Bowie as well. And I was like, fab, brilliant, love it. But yeah, this is my, A Cherry Colored Funk is my favorite of their songs as well. And yeah, it's such a dreamy song, and it's so beautiful, and I don't care what they're singing about. It doesn't matter to me. Like, I don't know, and nor do I need to know. I don't even know if I could quote
I've listened to that song so many times. I could probably would struggle to tell you very many lyrics in it.
Yeah, same. It's like it exists in like a different language or something. Like, I don't need to know. It has its own, it's very kind of like image provoking as opposed to like, you know, story. Yeah. That's lovely.
But having said that, there is a lot of references to a place in your new album, Dublin, of course. And the places like the Lord Edward mentioned in there. And, you know, I mean, I guess when we talked before, you know, I first knew of you as somebody who was New York based, and then you moved home. And so I guess, like, how do you feel about Dublin now? I mean, it must be a bit anticlimactic sometimes coming home to Dublin from New York. Like, it's a lot smaller. It's a village compared to New York. You know,
it
what
is.
I mean?
But
I was getting ready to go on holidays to New York.
I told her. So he's I'm not moving though.
No, well,
not
we'll
yet. I don't know. I think in some ways, the fact that like the differences between New York and Dublin actually are the things that made it easier to come back here, because I hated being back in Dublin for the first year. Like, I really did. And I had great plans to leave again, and I just never really got my act together to do that.
Well, you had a pretty good excuse.
Which, COVID?
It wasn't. Yeah.
But I think I was probably home for maybe a year before. Well, yeah, to be fair, when that happened, I was like, well, I really ain't going anywhere now. But I don't know. I like that Dublin is more like a village. I did the big city thing. Like, I lived in a big city and I absolutely loved it, which is why I stayed for so long. But by the time it came for me to leave, I didn't really want to live in a big city like New York anymore. So, I mean, Dublin is not without its issues, of course. And
well, I mean, one of the things that I've noticed, and you've written about it as well a little bit, is, you know, I think every week I do the Irish Track of the Week, and every week there's a song about how Dublin is bringing someone down, or like upsetting them, or, you know, how there's not much here for a young person, and it's like every week, it's pretty relentless. Like, if you're paying attention, The pulse of the nation, of the nation's young people, is right there in the songs that they're writing every week. The frustrations are there all the time. And yeah, it is. I think it is an interesting thing because, you know, we are in a unique position. Like, there's that song on the album where you mention, is it hard to fake it? Talk to the Americans, point them back to their hotel. You know, it's like, yeah, something, you know, hotels have become such a hot button issue here in the last 3 years. You know, like, everywhere you turn, there's a hotel, and people. So the people who are in charge, there's not enough hotels. And then everyone else is like, well, there's nothing, there's no culture here at all. So, yeah.
I'm literally in a hotel right now. Yeah. Like, there's a hotel being built around me at this moment.
Yeah.
We have enough hotels.
And then hotels, every time something that has real value for, you know, the local community or culture seems to get, if it goes, the thing that replaces it is a hotel.
Often. And venues and all that stuff. And it's like, you're saying, I know your song 525 said Dublin City shutting down. I know you're probably talking about COVID, really, but like, I mean,
that's someone else asked me about that, and they were like, you know, is that about like all the local, seeing all your, you know, everywhere in Dublin kind of go out of business and be replaced by hotels? And I was like, yeah, actually, that's not what I meant, but that is totally applicable as well.
I have a
weird kind of relationship with Dublin, though, because I left when I was 18 and I came back when I was like just before my 27th birthday. And so I don't think I'm as fatigued by it as a lot of my friends are, because there's parts of it to me that still are really feel very exciting and new. But at the same time, I mean, all of the, like, you know, the housing crisis and all of that that affects, you know, a certain generation like that, I obviously am affected by that as well. And so there's, you know, even my band, like the four musicians who I employ, none of them live in Ireland anymore. Every single one of them has moved away in the last year. And that's kind of only happening more and more. Yeah. So
that's the other strand of things I see, especially is like, I don't know how many times I've written London-based, like, Dublin singer-songwriter or something.
Yeah,
London-based. Mostly it's London at the moment, it seems to be.
Yeah.
But yeah, and I understand why. It's been happening for a long, long time. But, you know, when things aren't happening here, you're like, oh, well, there we go. Here's another one.
Yeah.
And it's fine. It's understandable. But like, you know, it does make you feel a bit like, there's a lot of people having the same experience here. But you talked about positive things there. So what about Dublin that you do you actually love, as opposed to just like ragging on it?
I mean, I love the music scene here. I think it's really very very special, and it's something that I didn't find when I was in New York. And I don't know, it's just like, that was like, so many of my friends who I made since moving back to Dublin are people who I met through music, and that can be a really kind of sort of encouraging thing, when especially when you're a solo musician, because a lot of that is like time on your own, in your own head, with your own kind of anxieties. And but if you feel like you're part of a community, which I really do here, it makes that much, much easier. And that's something that I really, really value, and I don't think you find everywhere. I mean, let's hope we hang on to it, because obviously we've just said that half the people are leaving. But
it's been like that for a long time, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, so, and yet community persists and scenes persist, I think, as well. So,
yeah,
you know, people always want to come, like yourself, people always want to come back here if they can. And I think it's like, you know, like, you're on a label like Faction, who also are pretty instrumental in releasing a number of Irish Dublin artists who, you know, and that's really good, because that means the industry is based here as well.
Exactly,
as opposed to, oh, we have to go to London to release the album and or find a label. You know, it's like, that's building up the industry, and those things can really help as well. And the more, and there is more of that, there's more infrastructure around music in Ireland now than there was 10 or 15 years ago. And that's only a good thing. So it means there are reasons to come back. You know, I was in the Playground last week, Diffusion Labs place in Drimna, and you're like, it's massive. And they've done such a good job of it. And they've, you know, it's like, it's ambition, and it's, you know, trying to establish community. And you're like, that's We need more of that. And it is happening, but it's just very difficult to make that happen in the face of everything that's happening.
I think that's something that the music community here have, like, they've never lacked ambition. They've never lacked the willingness to kind of graft for spaces. And like, it's probably harder now than ever to kind of get things going and make things happen for so many varieties of reasons. And I'm constantly just in awe of the fact that stuff is going on against all of those odds. Like, you know, like, post-pandemic or not, like, recession, like, oncoming recession or not, all of it, Brexit, everything, like, every time I see something going on, or like a festival, or especially like a new festival or a new venue or anything like that, I'm like, wow, like, can you imagine what it would be like if we actually had like proper support from the government, like real support and real kind of trust from the government that these things would be a good thing, you know. It would be incredible, but yeah, no, they've never lacked kind of graft and ambition, which is nice.
I agree.
What you're talking about is change, and we have a song called I Can Change by LCD Sound System.
You are killing it. It's
incredible. That for a few reasons. When we were recording the album, the first thing that we did was we recorded everything to drum machines. So the first thing we did was make a beat in a drum machine, and then I would record guitar and vocals to that. Often we would mute the drum machine afterwards, and it often didn't even make it into the final to the actual song, but it was way more inspiring than singing to a click track. And we recorded the album at the clinic, which has every type of drum machine under the sun in there. So that was kind of crucial to the feel of a lot of them. But then this song is one that also kept coming up for the kind of more like the songs like Hard to Fake It and Purgatory, which are a bit darker and a little more electronic. And we actually one day, I think we're on a YouTube video about like how to mic the drum kit specifically in the way that James Murphy did in this song, I think, which we spent ages doing. And I don't know if we even got it right, but it was one of those things where like, this is a great idea, let's follow it and let's do it. And everyone was all very excited. And then I don't know. This was as well. Hard to Fake It was the last song that we kind of worked on in the studio, and maybe the hardest one to get right. There was a point where I was like, this is a disaster, let's leave it off the album. Like, I just don't think it's working. And now it's probably one of my favorites, but I remember I kept listening to this song. I'd get so lost in it, and then I would come back to this song and it would just give me some kind of clarity. On how to find my way through.
Nice. Sort of a roadmap of some kind. Or maybe a reset to bring you back to where you thought you were going to go.
Exactly. There's like a few kind of, there's like a drum, kind of like a, there's like these like pitch toms or something from one of the drum, I don't even remember which drum machine it was, that are in the like middle eight of Hard to Fake It, that always remind me of I Can Change. So there's a few little like nods to it. But it was definitely, LCD was definitely a reference for the less bandy, more dancey tunes on the album.
Yeah. I love that. that kind of drum sound is amazing.
Drum sound is amazing. Did you say, Andre, did you say, is that my favorite LCD song? I don't know. I'm a big fan of Oh Baby. That is one of my faves. I don't know if it's my favorite. It's definitely one of my favorites. But for some reason, it made the most sense to me in the context of what I was doing on these songs.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think it's really easy if you start using drum machines and synths for it to take on a very like sort of glossy, maybe slightly too poppy sort of sheen. And I think LCD they use those things in a way that still sounds kind of, there's a real human touch to it all, which I was definitely trying to hold on to on some of our stuff.
I have my current favorite song, because that's the kind of band LCD are. Yeah. Us Versus Them is my current favorite song, because I was watching the Madison Square Garden show, and you know, they do it at the live gigs, and actually I saw it at Brixton over the summer, and the bit where it kicks in and the disco ball hits, and you're
yeah,
that was a special moment from this summer, and I was reliving it the last few weeks, and that's my current favorite.
Yeah, I like to just like whenever anybody posts, especially in the Discord, any kind of cringy stuff that James Murphy's doing, I just ignore. I'm just like, no. I'm only going to listen to the music. I'm not going to look at anything else that's going on around that man. But look, there's worse things you can be in the world than cringe.
True.
Yeah.
Unfortunately true.
The third song that you chose was the only one on the list that I didn't know before going in. So I'm excited to hear.
Yeah. So this guy, Dijon, he supported Bon Iver not too long ago. He wasn't supporting last night, was he?
No, he did the US tour, I think.
Oh, right. Very good. And that song many times from the album is the one that the live version.
Yeah.
Have you seen that one?
Yeah,
it's really amazing. But I don't know this song. This is this predates it. So tell me a bit about this. I'll play it first. And this is Good Luck from Dijon.
Back in the days when I held you, oh, I really held you. I pulled you and compelled you. And maybe I was spellbound too. Back in the days if I hurt you, oh, I really hurt you. Could barely look you in the eyes then. Oh, maybe I'm a con man, a con man. You don't need a rabbit's foot or good luck charm. With the hell, I wish you well. Couldn't do you no harm, and I do you no harm.
So that song is just a minute and 15 seconds. Is it off an album or off a release, or is just this one, a Lucy?
Just a Lucy, yeah.
Yeah.
When I was in America, we were actually kind of under the same management and stuff. So I knew his music very early because of that, you know.
Yeah.
And I always thought he was brilliant. And he's put out a couple of EPs and a couple, like many, many, many standalone singles. I didn't know which one of his to include because I listened to him a lot. And I think he's a real master of like very short, succinct songs. Mm. And early on anyway, like I used to, like I think like Petrol Station, which is a song of mine that came out in 2015 or something, that song's like 5.5 minutes long. And sometimes my impulse is to say everything. And I was really trying to fight against that on certain songs in this. And I think, it's like, you know, it does a minute, if the song only needs a minute, you know, that's enough. You don't need to go write a second verse and a bridge and a chorus and a post-chorus. Like, so maybe like songs like 525, I think I was just trying to just say only what was necessary. And sometimes that's actually way, way more effective.
Yeah. And it's harder to do probably. And it's also for a listener, it's the kind of thing that you're like, oh, it's too short. I want to go listen to it again.
Yeah. Better you know play it twice.
Like, yeah. So yeah, exactly. You're like, oh, I wish it was longer. But sometimes you don't need it to be longer. You just need it to be as it is. And it's yeah. fine. You're like, yeah, that's just long enough. Yeah, great. 525. He isn't played over here yet, has he? I don't think so. Although I guess, you know, what's going on with touring at the moment, it's
kind
of hard to describe and feel whether anybody will be coming here.
Ever again.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, last week on the podcast, we were talking about Alma Collective cancelling their gigs because they just can't make it financially viable. I'd say there's a lot of, it's very tough for American artists to come over here, especially if the UK is a big part of, as it always is,
exactly.
part of their touring schedule. Probably less... You know, I mean, you're doing UK gigs, but you're also doing Germany and the Netherlands in the next month or so. And I guess, do you know how difficult it's going to be for the UK buzz? I heard Owen O'Sullivan's podcast, actually, Point of Everything with Gillaband, and they were talking about the Carnot system. And I think it's like no one really knows what's going on or how it works.
It's but they were mess. Saying,
yeah, like 30% of the cost of their equipment is being held in a deposit.
Yeah.
And it's just, I don't really know how it works at all. It's like how you never get that money back unless you stop touring.
Exactly.
Like, it just seems bizarre. So,
and also, like, the other thing that's really difficult now with touring the UK is selling merch, because if you ship it over, you have to pay huge import tax on it, and then so all of your profits are gone. So then what's the point? And as everyone talks about all the time, merch is like one of the ways that you might help yourself to break even on a UK tour. So every time I see someone cancel a tour,
a lot of bands are like selling merch outside the venue as well, so that they're not hit by costs from the venue like, as well. So
Been insane. But at least there isn't a bit of ingenuity there. People actually trying to do that. And I guess you could like get all your merch printed in the UK for the UK if you wanted to. But it still doesn't make it easy. And that's just the extras, not the core stuff that you need.
Yeah. I mean, often you're losing money anyway. Like, I did a UK tour in, when was that? February 2020, which was not profitable, you know? And that was before Brexit and before everything else, so...
But the UK also doesn't have great fees for anything, like for music, for bands, especially, well, if you're starting out, maybe like if you can sell out venues, that might be a different case, but like it is really tough over there. So it was already tough before Brexit and everything else and inflation and whatever else. So it's a tough place to go to at the moment.
It is. Mm. Having said that, I'm like, and I can't wait to go there in 3 weeks' time.
Well, yeah.
Glutton for punishment.
Edinburgh, Manchester, London, Brighton. So where do you like to play in the UK?
You know, like, I actually love playing in Manchester. Manchester is great. It's not on this tour, but I've played a few shows in Nottingham, which has always been really fun as well. It's a really good student town. There's a big university there. Haven't played Edinburgh before, but like have played Glasgow a couple of times, which has been great. And obviously London is good because there's so many of my friends are in London. So it's like not quite a hometown show, but there's always loads of Irish people there.
Yeah.
But yeah, it'll be like I'm doing this one slightly different than I did the previous one because I can't, like last time I did it and we did totally full band and, you know, no expenses spared. And this time I am doing a sort of modified version of the live show just to make it affordable.
And you're of course playing your biggest Dublin show ever, this Thursday in the Olympia. That's, you know, it's no matter who you are, it's still it's a special occasion, that, right? Like the Olympia, it's a big one. It's a big one, and it's a special venue to do. Like, you must be looking forward to that one.
I honestly can't wait. I just think if you grow up in Dublin, like, you obviously, everyone has their favorite like hometown venue, and for me, it's always been the Olympia, and I've supported a few people there, but I've obviously never headlined it. And even with these songs, like, I can't wait to play these songs in that scenario, you know, in that environment. It feels very special. I know a few years ago, maybe like 2 years ago, I was talking to my managers, and they were like, yeah, you know, they mentioned like, you know, and then sort of like they were laying out a plan, and they were like, and then, you know, by this point, maybe it wouldn't be beyond the realms of possibility to do an Olympia show. And I think at the time I was maybe doing a headline show in Whelan's, and I was like, okay, like, that's a nice idea. I'm sure, you know, at the time it didn't seem to me, I didn't quite know how I would get there.
Yeah.
But here we are.
Very good. Yeah. Lovely. Okay. Well, our next choice is from the band Big Thief, and it is their song Masterpiece. Let's hear it. Did you get to see Big Thief earlier this year? Soccer?
I did, in the National Stadium.
Yeah, great gig. What a gig.
What a gig. I'd actually seen them at Vicar Street before, and I preferred that gig. Oh,
that's good, because I was at that one. I think it was the National Stadium. It makes me feel better.
The Vicar Street one. You know what? I genuinely think it was just down to where my seats were in the room. And Vicar Street, I was like up on the balcony and had perfect bird's eye view of the stage, and then the National Stadium, I just think I didn't have very good seats, and I was so, you know, when you're so excited for a gig, and then you get there and you're like, oh,
it's not everything I wanted.
This isn't right. This was supposed to be perfect.
Where were you
kind of like in the first like block of seats on kind of the curve.
Okay. Yeah,
I just think there's a few places in that venue that are, if I was booking tickets for there again, I think I'd know where to book now.
It's so funny. I know those people.
I got tickets beside the stage.
I know those people who went to that gig, and like, loads of them were like, "Oh my god, it's an amazing venue! It's like such a good view," and blah blah. And then there was like a little pocket of people being like, "No, like it doesn't work as a venue," and for exactly that reason, that there's just a few pockets that are blind spots. And I was like, "Oh, that's such a shame." And also, was somebody not in the Discord saying that there was a sort of like a hot dog van or something? At a different gig, and there was like a smell of
hot dog. I don't know about hot dog van.
I have a vague recollection. Maybe there's a sign for hot dogs.
Well, someone could smell hot dogs when they went to a gig.
Oh right, yeah. Somebody was seated near a smell that was like, this is overpowering. Yeah, the gig.
You just don't expect to smell food while you're at a gig. I'm gonna get hungry, and but I still haven't been to a gig there.
It could be here or miss. Yeah, you never know.
Andrea, I'll look up where my seats were, and I'll text you that, and just avoid there, that area. And you'll probably be fine.
But Masterpiece by Big Thief is just one of my favorite songs, one of my favorite of their songs, maybe my favorite of their albums as well. So, tell us a bit about what why you were listening to this song while you were recording?
I mean, I think Adrian Lenker is probably my favorite songwriter around today. I just think she is brilliant. She does, she writes in a way that is so intimate. You know, you kind of feel like you're overhearing a conversation between like two people at the next table in the restaurant or something. But there's, I don't know, for my album, I feel like there's two sort of things happening. And one is like the more, you know, the LCD sort of synthy kind of dancey thing. I mean, that's a pretty, that's a, my version of that, which is not the full, the full shebang. But then the other thing on my album is a much kind of like looser guitar driven band thing going on. And I think my reference for that is like, is kind of always Big Thief. There was a point maybe towards the end of the studio days where we decided to have a guitar player called Jay Curran come in and play like additional guitar stuff on it. And that's not something we did on the first album. The first album, all of the guitar was played by me or by Alex, but Jake is an incredibly good guitar player. So I didn't even know if we needed him. And then he was there about 5 seconds and I was like, oh, okay, let's get him to play on that one as well. And let's get him to play on that one. And I think he really kind of changed the sound of the album in quite a big way. Added a whole other texture and dimension to it and a kind of like looseness to some of the songs like Archie and Stalemate and I don't know. And I think like before he came in, someone was like, oh, I'll send Jake the songs tonight so he can like hear them and come in tomorrow. And I was like, nobody send Jake anything. I don't want him to practice before he gets here. I don't want him to come in and have like made up a part. You know, I just want him to come in and hear it and then just play whatever he thinks of in the moment, you know. And I think, I don't know, I think this Big Thief has that kind of loose sort of, there's a bit of a kind of like wildness to Buck Meek's guitar playing always.
Favorite thing about that band is how Adrian Lenker and Buck Meek's guitar playing is just always, it's always so in sync and yet often so kind of clashing as well. Like they're like two separate vocal lines that are harmonizing or just two very, very separate ideas. Even how they perform on stage, you know, Buck Meek is obviously like wild and out constantly. Yeah. Like I think that that Tiny Desk concert, I think it was the first one that they did. Adrian still has her fringe and her long hair. And one of the comments on it is like, this looks like if you got four people from entirely separate bands and put them together, but like the camera just like pans over the three of them are going so fine. True. Adrian is like, you know, very, very like singer, demure singer songwriter look. And then it pans over to Buck Meek and he's just like completely vibing it out. But he is just such a like, he's an incredible guitar player. Like, and I just think that the two of them mesh so well. And yeah, if that's just the inspiration, then I think absolutely the best decision is to just get someone to react in the moment as opposed to like, you know, composing something beforehand, because it just wouldn't have that same like organic sort of feeling that that Big Thief managed to do. They're just, oh, they're my favorite band. I just love them so much. I really love them.
Yeah, me too.
It might not be for everyone as well. That kind of vibe is like, just come in and see what happens. And you're like, oh, totally. You know.
I mean, I know one of my friends was at the Big Thief gig and he was like, he didn't enjoy it particularly because I think he was like, but they were, it was, he was like, it was a mess. Like they weren't tight at all. But for me anyway, that is, I don't care about that with them. You know, it's all feeling and it's all impulse. And the two times I've seen them, but I think I've watched like every live video that exists of them. They play the songs so differently all the time, you know, and I think that's because they're really in it and it's very easy to get away from. It's really easy to forget that and to just kind of plug in, play, because we know this song. So let's, you know, it's really easy to be somewhere else when you're doing it.
I don't think as well, they are. Like when they're touring, I think I read in an interview with one of them that they might just decide on the day, like, no, it's not right for us to play this song with the edges today, or we'll swap this out with this song. Or
I think we felt that at the last gig, or maybe actually both gigs.
Well, there was my famous,
felt like the set list.
My famous Vicar Street one. To leave until they play USOS.
Let's not do the Vicar Street one.
Let's not do this again, Andrea.
But like they will do that. They won't play their big song if they're not in the mood to play it, you know.
But they did that. Remember, they did that in Vicar Street. They were like, they started the song. It was like, no, this isn't working. Let's do something else. And we're like, whoa.
Yeah.
And it feels weird if you don't know what their vibe is. You're like, are they fighting? Like, they look like they're fighting. It's like, no, they just decided they don't want to play that song right now. It was like, okay.
Yeah. Which I appreciate. I really love that about them.
Would you do that? Would you be like, no, I'm not going to play Archie tonight. I'm not in the mood.
I do that if I'm playing solo sometimes, but it's not that I like exclaim it to the crowd. Like I see it on my set list and I'm like, oh no, skip. I don't know. I don't think I'm as relaxed on stage. Well, I don't know if you'd say it's relaxed. They just have a real kind of, I don't think they can be anything other than how they are. And it's fine. I think at least from like, do you remember that video she put up about people giving out because they didn't do encores or something? And she was like, you know, if we feel like doing an encore, we'll do it. And if we don't feel like doing an encore, then we can't do it. And I think I find it harder to to be as true to myself sometimes.
Well,
I think
encores are weird anyway, though.
So if it's if Archie's on my set list, I'll probably play it. Encores are weird.
If you go to see a band and they don't do an encore, you feel like you didn't get a bit of the gig. But by nature, they're supposed to be like a little extra, a little thank you or a little bonus. Yeah.
You're like, oh, they didn't love, they didn't like us enough. You know, they don't miss us.
Yeah. The 40th night they played in a row. I can't believe they don't think we're special. Like, yeah.
Okay, from Big Thief masterpiece to maybe a surprising last choice. I'm just going to play it because I think everyone will know it.
So before Alex came to Dublin, I think I had a call with him and he, out of the blue, started talking about Oasis a lot. I think him and his brother were on a holiday and they'd like maybe watch the Oasis documentary or something and were listening to a lot of Oasis. And he was talking about them a lot and I was like, oh God, what album does he think we're making? And because I was not thinking about Oasis when I was writing.
Yeah. What was your relationship with Oasis before that?
I mean, like, some of their songs I love. And I think, like, growing up, I learned so many Oasis songs on guitar. But I've never really thought of them as a reference point for my music, you know? But then he was like, you know, he sort of started talking about them, about, you know, this sort of like very immediate anthemic sing-along kind of style of writing, you know.
Which that is a great example of.
That is a great example of. It's like the verse is the chorus, and you can hear it once, and, you know, if you don't hear that song for 20 years, you'll still be able to sing it. So I think we were kind of, then when he explained it to me like that, I was like, okay, that actually does make sense to me. And I was still finishing writing some of the songs. So I kind of, and I kind of think I returned to them with that in my head. And that song seemed like a very good example of that. And then sometimes when we were in the studio, like very jokingly, someone would be like, imagine like everyone in like Wembley Stadium at a football match singing this, like, you know, this, that's what you want. That's what you want it to be, you know, that kind of like very, like someone in not in the bad way, but in a good way, someone picks up a guitar in a party and sings it. If that can ever be in a good way, I'm not sure. Exactly.
I think with Oasis, it's interesting because I think it's easy to fall into the kind of like eye-rolly thing of like, oh, Oasis are like, you know, a dad band, or those like bootcut jeans with the brown leather shoes, and, you know. And then I remember I watched Noel Gallagher's set at Glastonbury earlier this year. And obviously he finished with like, you know, 10 Oasis tracks in a row. And I was just like, oh, they are good. You know, like they do that anthemic arms around the shoulder, the beer sloshing all over your mates, but you don't care because you all have a great time kind of thing. Just so, so well. Like no one does it like them. And She's Electric is a fantastic kind of version of that.
Yeah.
It's just like, yeah, we're here. Like
the verse is the chorus. Like every part of it is a hook.
You know,
And there's, again, with that song, there's a, it's not like, it's not overthought. It's not perfect. It's not like, look at how smart I am. Look at what a good songwriter I am. It's exactly.
And the backing vocals.
It's just about her being electric. Sure. Like,
and the backing vocals. Yeah. She's just, God, look at her. Very true.
Yeah.
So that's why that I just couldn't, I couldn't leave it out. I had to include it.
I smiled when I saw it on the list. I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
Because the rest of them, I was like, oh, yeah, I can see that. I can definitely see it through line. Yeah. And then She's Electric.
There's also,
like,
even when we recorded like the guitar, there's a sort of what the stem is called, lead guitar on Stalemate. But it was actually Alex like screaming into the pickup on one of the electric guitars. And it was like kind of nonsensical, and he was like sort of howling into it. But then when we listen to it back, it just sounds like a weird, really long guitar solo. I don't think we muted any of it. We were like, yeah, that's perfect. Let's leave that in. And that kind of was born out of the Oasis She's Electric.
Yeah.
I think inspiration too.
Cool.
Thank you.
Great. Well, I mean, Sorky, you've illuminated your second album, Smiling Like an Idiot, which is a title I love as well. It's a great album title.
Thank you.
And we wish you the best in your continued success.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to Sorka for taking the time on a Monday morning to come and chat to us again. It was lovely to have her. And yeah, like I said, Sorka Richardson's tour date's happening. This week, the Irish tour dates are happening, the Three Olympia, on Thursday, the 20th of October, and 19th tomorrow, Wednesday, in the Limelight 2 in Belfast. That's the 19th of October. So yeah, go and check it out, and go check out Smiling Like an Idiot. It's a really lovely album and a lovely second album. And I think, as I said, you should go and listen to, you should go read Andrea Cleary's lovely review in the Journal of Music and enjoy that context as well. So thanks, Andrea. We're not here next week, unless you plan to do one without me. But no, I think
God knows
we're not here.
If I have something to say, I'll say it. You know, but no, we probably won't be because I don't know how to upload podcasts. So, but yeah, no, we'll be back the week after. I assume for our Best of October.
Oh yeah, Best of October. For sure, we'll be talking about new music and great. Okay. That's it from us this week. Thanks a million.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.